Today on the Rising Coaches podcast.
He would see me going through a lot of things. It was like I just had bad luck written on my forehead. And so he would always tell me, don't ask why me, ask what next. And so I really carried that mentality from JUCO, and that's something that I live by today. It's like, okay, this happened. You can't control it. So what? What's next? Bring on the next challenge in life. Bring on the next obstacle.
Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership on risingcoaches.com. All right. Thank you for joining us for a real conversation. I'm Adam Gordon, and today we're joined by Adut Bulgak, free agent currently, but former number 12 draft pick in the WNBA, former Florida State Seminole. You've got a long list of things on your resume. I don't want to leave anything off. Model, yeah, like humanitarian. Yeah, so thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Okay, so obviously like in the Zoom era now, everyone's coming from their home and from different locations. So like, where are you physically tonight?
Physically, I am in Edmonton, Alberta in Western Canada.
Okay, is that home for you?
Yes, this is home.
This is home. Okay, cool. So you have like a very fascinating story. I did a little research preparing for our conversation, and tell us, give us some background about like your childhood, where you grew up. Obviously, you've gone on to have great success in basketball, playing professionally, but take us back to the beginning.
Okay, so my family migrated to Canada in 1999. I was actually born in Kakuma in a refugee camp there, and we came to Canada March of 1999. We pretty much lived all across Canada, started on the East Coast. We lived in Saskatchewan, Regina, we've lived in Winnipeg, and finally we settled in Edmonton in about 2001, I believe, where I started school in third grade or second grade, I can't really remember. But so I finished my elementary school here. I finished junior high here. I finished high school here. I started playing sports very early. I started off with tennis actually here in Edmonton. I was a singles player when I was around 10 years old and could never find a partner for doubles, and so I stopped playing tennis. I played soccer, I ran track, I started playing volleyball in the fifth grade. That was my real like first love in sports, and I played up until high school and had many, many shoulder dislocations, which ultimately forced my retirement in volleyball. And then I picked up basketball really later on, I think seventh or eighth grade, and didn't really play seriously until about high school. And ended up going to JUCO in Trinity Valley Community College in Athens, Texas, and then transferred to Florida State, where I graduated with a sociology and criminology degree. So yeah, that's my sports background. Personal life, I grew up in a really big household. There's six of us, sibling wise, and then my two parents. We've all been living together, grew up all together. I tragically lost my first brother when I was 15 years old, and then that was my oldest brother, and then lost my second oldest brother when I was 17 years old. And so it's just been me, my younger brother, and my younger sister, and my older brother. That,
wow.
Yeah, that's remaining a really big family. And of course, my parents, but just sibling wise. And then, yeah, I think that's, I don't know, that's a lot.
But that was a lot. Yeah, no, that's, we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
all right, well, let's start with the easy stuff and okay. talk a little hoops. So do you think there's, you know, so many kids like specialize in a sport and they play just that one sport. Like, obviously you played a ton of different sports mm-hmm. and you came to basketball later. I think you say eighth or ninth grade. Mm-hmm. Was there an advantage to that, you think? Like coming in, fresh perspective, like you're probably excited about the game. Yeah, what do you think?
I think it's really important for kids to play a variety of sports growing up so that they can actually see what it is that they like and enjoy. For me, I'll be honest, I can't sit here and say basketball was my favorite sport. It was kind of almost forced because I feel like I had exhausted all my options and then basketball was my last route. And then with my shoulder dislocation, it was just like, I wasn't ready to stop playing sports. And I was just too far, like, straight away from the other sports to kind of pick up on those. And so just the excitement of a new sport and competing and knowing that the only way there was for me was to improve in this sport was really what kept me going in basketball.
And then how do you end up at Trinity Valley? Like I coached JUCO for a couple of years and, you know, like we had kids from all over the world and everyone I feel like had a story of like how they ended up at that school. So how do you go from like Canada to Trinity Valley?
My route going to JUCO was not the most, like, it wasn't a highlight. It was actually a road full of adversity. I had signed to a prep school, Word of God, in North Carolina, and ended up being shut down when I ended up there. And so the coach started his own program in South Carolina, which was kind of just like a bunch of AAU stuff, AAU traveling, competitions, AAU style. But all of us were high school graduates, only like same year out. And so I did that for about a year. And then I had signed to University of North Carolina, Tar Heels. And then some unfortunate stuff happened with the coach, my transcripts, a lot of things just did not work out and fall through. And so I ended up losing my scholarship to North Carolina. And I was actually ready to like literally quit basketball at that point. This was back in 2012, early 2012. And so I was ready to quit. And I had just called one of my mentors, Leanne Osei, who was actually a Trinity Valley alumni, which I did not know at the time. Didn't know what JUCO was. It was basically, for me, when I lost that scholarship to North Carolina, I felt like that was it. It was either there or nowhere. And so I lost all of that. And then Leanne just made a phone call to Coach Lovato, who was the coach at Trinity Valley at the time. And she had never seen me play. She never heard my name. She didn't know who I was. But fortunately, Lee spoke very highly of me. And Coach Lovato offered me a scholarship on the spot. And that was my route to JUCO. Yeah.
What were the JUCO years like? Did you love them? Did you hate them? Was it rough? I mean, a little bit of both.
It was a bit of both. Like, I was obviously an international student. I was still struggling with that, adapting, being away from home and alone in another country. But I really loved my teammates. They made me feel like I was one of their own family members. Like, we all met our I met their families. And we had a host family program in JUCO. And so I had my own family, the Traxons, who I'm still very close to this day. And so it was a very home feeling environment for me. And so I really did enjoy JUCO, and winning two championships there, national championships, obviously even better.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt. Yeah. So we have a lot of coaches that like listen and follow along with our shows and what we do. What advice would you give to coaches like that have maybe just like one international kid on their team? Like, cause I feel like coaches don't empathize enough with like how difficult that experience probably is.
Yeah, I think they need to understand that it gets very, very lonely as an international student, because one, I wouldn't say I came from a very wealthy family, and so it wasn't like I was able to travel back and forth from home as some local students was. And so I feel like, I don't know, just inclusion, because just making the student feel like their holidays are known, just having that background of important things to your international student. I think that's a very important thing. And a lot of schools do have international student programs. I didn't know that much about that at the time. And I feel like coaches should be aware of that and introduce those kind of programs to their international students so that they do know that there's a community that they belong to outside of basketball.
Yeah, that's great stuff. I feel like, like I mentioned, that probably gets overlooked, and coaches get so caught up in like the basketball side of it that they, you know, it's hard to put yourself in the shoes of your athlete and, you know, be in tune to their needs, but you have to.
Right.
Okay. I want to go back and talk about something that you mentioned. And I know it's probably hard to talk about, so if you know, whatever, you let me know, but, you mentioned losing your brothers. I lost my oldest brother when I was 14. So like the same age, or close in age. Mm-hmm. He died in a car accident. And so like, obviously that had like a big impact on who I am today. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine going through it twice, but like, what did that, you know, do for you in terms of like shaping you into the woman that you are today?
My two oldest brothers were the foundation of my life today. They, my parents worked a lot when I was growing up. And so they really took on that parental role of taking care of my younger siblings and I. And so losing them was really, to me, was like losing a parent. And, it was very hard at the time to deal with. And like for me, it was just seeing my mom be able to push and move on from losing her own children. And so I think that's what kept me going to this day. Like even now, I'm like getting teary eyed. I didn't think it was still gonna affect me as hard as it does now. But yeah, they played probably the biggest role in shaping me to be the woman that I am today in terms of everything I know, like the discipline, the even just cooking and cleaning, just little things. They definitely raised me as if I was one of their own children.
So I'm trying to like picture like, so 15 and 17 were the ages that you were when mm-hmm. you lost your brothers. And then, so it's like just a year later or maybe a year and a half later mm-hmm. that now you're like supposed to go to North Carolina. You're supposed to go to Word of God. That mm-hmm. falls through. Now you're at JUCO. And obviously you guys, I mean, like, there's just so much going on in your life.
Yeah, I feel like that's, honestly, that's been the story of my life. Even to this day, it's like just a road of adversity. And I don't know, I never let it made me, it never made me fold. I feel like I'm actually built for this kind of stuff. And it's just a matter of my coach in JUCO used to always tell me, because he would see Coach G, he would see me going through a lot of things. It was like I just had bad luck written on my forehead. And so he would always tell me, don't ask why me, ask what next. And so I really carried that mentality from JUCO, and that's something that I live by today. It's like, okay, this happened. You can't control it. So what? What's next? Bring on the next challenge in life. Bring on the next obstacle. So that's kind of been my motto in life since dealing with all these things.
Yes. Shout out Coach G. Good advice.
Yes, very.
Okay. So yeah, and amazing how sports kind of like equips us with that, you know, ability to handle adversity, even off the court and in life. And so you do get some good luck. You guys win back-to-back championships.
Mm-hmm.
You sign at Florida State. Yep. Now you're in the big leagues in the ACC. Do you feel like you've made it? Like what? I'm sure those 2 years go by really fast, but, you know, talk about that.
They did go by really fast. It was very, very surreal to me. Even up until getting drafted to the WNBA, it really didn't hit me until that second year. It was like, whoa, like I really came this far, like being a refugee kid to being in Canada to ending up playing at the highest level of basketball in college and then the highest level in the world for women's basketball. It seemed very surreal to me.
Yeah. And you just said it, like you got drafted after 2 years there at Florida State, you get drafted to the WNBA and you're very proud about the fact that you're the first and only WNBA player from South Sudan, correct?
Yes, very.
Are you still the only one?
I still am the only one, but that's the reason why I'm so proud of it is because there's so many young girls that are coming up right now. There's a lot of them that are playing major and mid-major Division I basketball and in JUCO. And I love it because sports aren't really glorified for women in our culture. And so for me to be there and be that pioneer for them and to see that you can go this far in sports, that's why I have so much pride in being that figure for them.
When you got drafted, did people start reaching out to you from South Sudan, or, you know, did people start DMing you, and was it like a big, yeah. You realize what a big deal it was?
I still didn't realize what a big deal it was, but my Facebook was flooded. That is the easiest place to be found globally, I think. That is the biggest market for people. And so, like, my DMs were just flooding with any and everybody, people I knew, people I didn't know, a lot of Sudanese just literally extending their congratulations to me, telling me how proud they were. And I actually had to deactivate my last Facebook because it just got so overwhelming with messages. But to see that type of news traveled all the way across the world and to have that much support and just pride in a nation, it was really special.
Yeah, it's amazing. Can you give us like a little background on like South Sudan and like, obviously your family, they were refugees, but I don't even know, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I'm sure I'm not the only one. Like, I don't even know what the situation was in South Sudan that led to having refugees. And can you give us a brief history lesson, I guess?
Like most of Africa, it was a very war-torn country. And so we were going through a lot of civil war for the longest in the early like 60s, 70s. And we're actually the youngest nation in the world right now. We were freed in July 9th of 2011. I would love for that to be the correct date. But yes, that was the year that we became an independent country. We became the world's youngest country. And so, I mean, a lot of our traditions still reside in North Sudan because that's just what it was for the longest. All we did was separate to Northern Sudan is mostly Muslim and Southern Sudan is majority Christianity.
Gotcha. It was a lot of the conflict due to religion.
More or less, no.
Yeah, like most wars, or like a lot of wars, I guess.
Yeah, in the fight for the freedom, yes.
Right, gotcha. Now, have you been to South Sudan?
I have not been back yet. This was actually the year I was supposed to go back. Unfortunately, COVID really messed everything up in that sense. And so,
yeah. Coronavirus. Still waiting.
Yeah, patiently waiting for that day.
Yeah, okay. What was the plan? I mean, do you have family out there? Are you in touch?
My father actually still lives out there. My grandparents, a lot of my mom's family. I have a lot of immediate family that still lives out there.
Oh, amazing.
And also on the basketball side, there is a lot. I just wanted to go show face pretty much to just with all the young people who know who I am and just where my career is with basketball. I just want them to be able to put a physical face to this name of mine. And so there's that part of basketball, but I really do want to go back home to my roots, be able to go to my parents' village, all of that.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I hope that happens for you soon. So on the basketball front, is Luol Deng, is that right? Is he the president of the federation in South Sudan? So what has he done? What has he kind of brought to your country in terms of basketball, and what's he kind of trying to do in terms of developing?
In the short time that he was elected president, like, he was able to start a men's national team, and they competed in the preliminaries for AfroBasket this past January. And so he moved very quickly in developing that program, and that is a huge step. Like, there has been times in the past where they've tried to start national teams, but this is the first, like, legit official one, and it's just amazing to have that representation. And on the women's side, I know myself and another fellow player, Achille Tak, we've been pushing the agenda so hard to start a women's team. And I guess we made enough noise, and they're definitely working on that now. And so that's the next step for us, is to have a women's national team.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So is that kind of like your dream to play for your country?
Absolutely. I had played for the Canadian national team, but for me, to be able to play for South Sudan would really be like the highest tier of my career. That would be basically, to me, would be, I mean, apart from the Olympics, that would be the last accomplishment in basketball for me. Is just, I just want to experience all of it, but to be able to represent my country, I think that would really top my career.
What even goes into like starting a national team? Like, I don't even know where to begin.
Players, funding.
Yeah,
lots of funding and support. I think for us, it's a weird dynamic because we're such a tall, like, we're a tall people. I'm 6'4". For the women's side, especially, it's like, we feel like a majority of us all play the same position. And so we're just going to have like a team of a bunch of 6-footers from guard to centers. And
but a dude, you can shoot, you can stretch the floor, and you're versatile.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm willing to take on any and whatever role I need to when it comes to the national team. But I think I want to shoot the ball a bit more.
Okay.
But, I guess just the funding and the support in all. And I think Luol and the Federation are on a really good path to making that happen for us.
Yeah, that's amazing. Most recently, I know you played a few years in the WNBA. You were in Israel, where it looks like, based on the numbers, you've been dominating. And what was that experience like playing in Israel?
Israel is my favorite country of all the countries I've played in so far, just because it's the most adaptable country. And I feel like it had the most WNBA players there. From current players to former players, retirees, they get a lot of WNBA experience in Israel. And the competition was really high for that first year I was there and the second year. And so just that part of it.
Yeah, basketball is a big deal out there.
Right? Yeah, it is. Like, I was really surprised at how big basketball is. I think there's like 3 divisions for women and about 3 or 4 for men's now. So they take it pretty serious there.
Yeah. What do you mean the most adaptable city? Just like easy to live in or what?
Yeah. The country is 70% English speaking, which is a very underrated thing when you're going to play overseas. We're right there. Like, it's a very small country. And so it's like 7 hours from north to south. And for an example, like when I went to Spain, there was a team that we played that was an 8-hour bus ride away. That's a longer ride than what it takes to get across all of Israel. And so transportation is pretty short. The longest I've ever had to ride to go to a game was like 50 minutes in rush hour. And so transportation is very easy. Food is delicious. Language barrier is not really there. So there's that.
Yeah, very cool.
Very comfortable.
What is something, obviously you've been around great players at every stop along the way. What is something that you've seen like separates the best?
Separates the best would be work ethic and the way that they take care of their bodies. I know that, like, in a sense, I know that's something that I really lacked with playing sports, because I'd always just been naturally athletic and had all that stamina. And so for me, it was like, go to practice, go to my individual workouts, go to games, and go home. But right. I get to be like around vets, and I learned, especially my rookie year in New York, just being around like a team full of vets was every day they're like stretching, every day is ice tubs, every day is going to prehab and rehab, every day is just keeping on top of your physical shape off the court and your nutrition, all of that. I think that was the longevity of a lot of their careers.
What do you like? What would that have done for you if you were doing stuff like back in the day at Trinity Valley or Florida State? Like, is it more of a longevity thing,
or
do you think it enhances performance?
Yes.
Like,
for me, it's more. Well, I think it's more of a longevity thing. Just extending that career, getting those extra years out. Growing up, I didn't really lift weights when I was in college. It was really hard for me to lift weights when I ended up transferring to Florida State, because I struggled in JUCO. And so just knowing, if I knew what if I knew then what I know now, obviously I would have definitely taken care of my body and paid more attention to just those little things.
Was there anybody in particular? You mentioned being on a team full of vets with the Liberty. Anyone in particular that like took you under their wing, or that you like stole some of their self-care?
Yes, Swin Cash and Tanisha Wright. I used to call them the aunties, and those two were just, because they were older, and so they were always just taking care of their bodies. And Swin, really, from day one, she knew that I was undersized in my position, and so was she. And she's shorter than I am and much older than I am, but she was pushing me around, bullying me in the paint when we were both playing the four position. And she just really, they all took me under their wings because I was the only rookie on the team at the time. But Swin specifically, and Tina, because they played the same position. And so they really took me in and were just pushing me, just little pointers here and there, just really helping me out.
Yeah, there's nothing like seeing it firsthand, right? Somebody leading by example. That
absolutely, and that was great to have from all 11 other of my teammates.
So are you playing the role? I mean, you're still pretty young in your career, but are you like taking on some of the more like leadership roles with your teams and being the vet, taking rookies under your wing?
Yes, definitely. I think I've become more vocal over the years just from watching that, being in that setting. I've always been the lead by example to me, which was be the hardest working one in the gym through college, or be the most competitive one. And that just elevated everybody else's competition. And so now it's mixing that in with using my voice. That's what I've learned from the vets, is to be more vocal. You have to put words behind those actions and actions behind those words. And so that really still sticks with me.
I was going to ask, what's the best advice that you've gotten?
Best advice that I've got would be, practice like you're in a game. And that to me is to not take shortcuts. It's like, if you're just simple things, if you're running back on defense, is run as fast as you can. I know Swin and Tina used to always tell me, is that the fastest you can run? I'd be like, no. And then they're like, okay, so why aren't you running any faster? So just every single possession as if it were a game.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. All right, what's next for you? I saw you signed a modeling contract. You know, you're in between seasons right now. So yeah. What's next?
That right now is something that I'm looking into. I never knew if people were joking or not, but a lot of my friends are like, you should model. And I'm just like, I just like to take pictures for fun, for Instagram, whatever. And then I had another Sudanese girl, Mari Malek. Her name's actually a dude as well. And so she reached out to me and was like, yeah, you should really try modeling. She's a... amazing work for women empowerment for South Sudanese girls. And so she actually messaged me and was like, you should really try this. This agency that I know, like, they're looking for new faces and all this stuff. And so she got me connected. And so I really want to give that a go. I just like to be a jack of all trades.
Well, how's the modeling? Like, do you like it? How is it?
It's fun, but very awkward for me. I think I'm a very awkward person. People who know me, my close friends know this, that I actually get really bad stage fright. And so it's a whole new experience for me, but I'm enjoying it. I like learning new things. So nice. It's fun.
Awesome. Awesome. Have you been glued to the Wubble?
Not too glued. It's been hard for me to keep up with the Wubble, but I got to catch a few games. I definitely check the stats after every game and read up on it. It's all over my Twitter and Instagram feed, and so it's not like I'm missing much. Besides missing watching the games, I'm able to keep up with what's going on in there.
Right. What? Like during this like pandemic and stuff, people are getting creative. Like, what have you like tried to, you know, focus on during the last 6 months here, or other than modeling? Have you picked up any hobbies?
I get really bored because the gyms just started opening up in end of June for us. And so I got my membership then, but during that time, I actually learned how to do nails, like acrylic nails, all this stuff, eyelash extensions. I'm getting my certificate at the end of the month. And so just literally just trying a whole bunch of different hobbies. And, I went back to studying. I'm currently studying to be a healthcare aide, which is pretty much like home care. And so, yeah, I got really bored during quarantine and picked up a lot of hobbies.
You are a jack of all trades. So how are all these skills going to like come together one day?
I don't know how I'm juggling all of them, but the studying, I try to give like the nails and the eyelashes like an hour a day and then actually focus on the actual studying of the healthcare aid stuff, because the nails and eyelashes are just side hobbies that I'll actually be able to take overseas and be able to help girls out, like the foreigners that come overseas there, like the Americans, and be able to help them out, because it's really hard to find those kind of places at times. So it'll be fun to bring services to my teammates.
Anyone in Edmonton, can they hit you up and get their nails done in the meantime?
By force, yes. my sister and my friends, if I need practice dummies, I'll just call them and they'll be happy to come help me.
Nice. I love it. Well, dude, I appreciate you being on today and enjoyed getting to chop it up with you a little bit. The last thing that I'll ask you is, what advice would you give to somebody who is, you know, whether they're a player or whatever, what's the best advice you can give someone else who looks up to you? Because you have been put in this role model position, especially in South Sudan. You know, what advice do you try to give?
What advice I give? I encourage people to ask a lot of questions, because that's one of the biggest things for me growing up, was there's a lot of unknown. And so just to ask questions, and whatever it is that you want to do in life, don't seek other people's approval, because a lot of us will either try to live through our parents, live for our parents, live for other people, try to please other people and their expectations. But ultimately, you have to do it for yourself. You have to be selfish in what it is that you love doing. And that's the only way you're going to be great at what you do, when you seek approval from yourself and not from others.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Did it take you a while to like, because that's easier said than done.
It's easier said than done. And it's very easy now, because that is something that I struggled with growing up, was trying to please other people around me, or trying to do right by other people, or do things for other people. And so when I really focused on me and focused on being a good basketball player, or being a good person, I really became better at that role that I wanted to achieve.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I guess I'm probably still trying to figure that one out, how to not seek approval from others and just do, right?
Yeah, just do your best. Be you. When you're authentic to yourself, then that's when your best shines.
For sure. That is the key. That's the key to happiness right there, right?
Got a new key. Yep.
But dude, I appreciate it. Have a great night. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's LUCEO sports.com.